Hi, I'm Isaac Mack here with
Roger Doster.
And I'm a student at Skyline High School, and I've been selected by Ms. King and the rest of the organization to interview Mr. Doster on his family's migration, and we're talking about the time period of the Great Migration. And really, the purpose of this interview is just to get to know his family and where they came from a little bit better and trace the history of the movement of where 90% of African Americans were at around 1910. Mm-hmm. All right, so Mr. Doster, if you don't mind me asking, what is your age, date of birth, and birthplace?
I always have to think about that. I'm 72, I'll be 73 this year. My date of birth is October 30th, 1950. I'm getting old, that's what that means.
So why are you interested in this project particularly?
Well, when I was first told about it, I was kind of excited because I've never been asked to talk about, how my parents ended up here and how I ended up here. And, even going back to my grandparents. So it kind of was an opportunity that I jumped at because to me, I just feel like I would like to tell someone, so. It was kind of an interesting thing for me to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it gives you a chance to verbalize.
Exactly. That's exactly.
Great. Okay, so I have a few questions, and I was wondering if it's okay if you would like to respond to them.
Absolutely.
Okay, and before we start, I also want to thank you for being a willing participant, and we appreciate it. Mm-hmm. All right. So first, what exactly do you know about your family's migration from the north to the from the south to the north?
Well, I think I know pretty much, in detail, pretty much how they got here. And it kind of goes back to really my grandparents, because my grandmother's aunt was really the first person in our family that ended up moving to this area in Detroit with her husband. Who was also in the military, and so when he got out of the military, he came here. So it kind of started with my grandmother's sister, so it would be my great aunt. And that kind of started the whole migration here of my family. I don't know if you want me to just go into some infinite detail about that. Okay. They're all originally from what we call South Georgia. It would be about 200 miles from the Florida border in Georgia, in a small little rural city called Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald is known for producing cotton. And if you think about, our history, you can understand why a lot of blacks, when they hear the word cotton, they always think of, okay, that's yeah. How we made a living. And that was true for my family. A lot of them was cotton pickers. And in that particular city, though, they had one factory, which was an underwear factory. Mm. And so they manufactured underwear. But a lot of blacks couldn't get jobs there early on. Mm. I'm talking about pre-1940 in the 30s and stuff like that. Mm. And if they did get jobs, they were the toughest jobs. And that was the only type of work that they could really get. So many people actually wanted to improve themselves somehow. And one of the ways was certainly for men was the military. A lot of them saw that as a way to at least advance themselves.
And whose husband did you say was in the military?
My great aunt, so my grandmother's sister. Okay. So he went into the military, and then they actually got married right before he went into the military. Mm-hmm. And when he got out, they moved to the Detroit area. And actually, they moved here with the understanding that he was going to look for a job in the automobile industry because that was a real big thing. Mm-hmm. Back then. And this would have been probably 1942, 43. Mm-hmm. And so when he came here, and he was kind of older at that point, he wasn't really a real, real young person. He didn't get a job in the automobile factory, but he got a job with Greyhound. Mm. as a mechanic, because he had learned those skills when he was in the military. So he had a really good job compared to the kind of job that he had when he was in the South when he came here. So he was really the first part of my family that came from the South, he and my great aunt. You know, that kind of started because they all came from very large families. And my grandmother's family, they had 11 children. Ooh. Yeah, and then
same thing with my grandmother. She has 12.
That's amazing, you know, and you hear a lot about that with older families, you know, mm-hmm. how large they were, and not always because it was the farm, you know, they worked the farm, or in some cases, you know, sharecropping is what I called it, mm-hmm. Because it wasn't, they didn't really own the farm, you know. But anyway, they came here after the military. He had a job, like I said, at Greyhound, and they were kind of the first family members to really move up here in the Detroit area. And interestingly enough, every family member that ended up coming to the Detroit area ended up living with them to kind of start out. And it was kind of something that was kind of not exceptional, it was kind of expected. In other words, they knew they had a place to stay if they were coming here, and it was always encouraged to leave the South to come to the North so that they could find work. And that's really what happened with my parents. Unfortunately, many of the individuals wasn't educated in terms of you know, having opportunities to go to college. In my case, my mom and my dad only made it to 9th grade for my dad and 10th grade for my mom. So neither one of them had really any formal education. Now, it's kind of interesting when I say that, because when I look back at their report cards, which I still have, my one from my mom, she was an excellent student, you know. Mm-hmm. And I used to always say, wow, God, she was such a good student, you know. Yeah, but, you know, it just, the opportunities wasn't there in the South. I mean, they really, it seemed like it was really, she was being held back, so to speak, you know, with no opportunity. So the first chance they got when they got married, they came here, and my dad got a job in the automobile industry with Chrysler Corporation. And at that time, the war was still going on. He had been in the military, got out of the military. The war hadn't ended when he came. And he actually was working with Chrysler, but he was actually painting army tanks when he first came here. So his job was in the paint department for the army tanks that they were building. And this was, they were doing this in the north side of Detroit, where they were actually building these tanks. And actually all around the Detroit metropolitan area at that time, there was a lot of automobile companies that had converted a lot of their plans to do things for the military. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't really unusual for that to happen. So that was his first opportunity job-wise. I don't know the salary that he was making when he first got here, but he wasn't knocking down a lot of doors with whatever it was.
I understand he worked with what he had.
Mm-hmm. But it was, you know, it really provided our family with a good opportunity, because we started out in Detroit mm-hmm. living, and we moved to a city called Inkster, which is outside of Detroit. Yeah. And what was very interesting to me about that is, even though he was working near the Detroit area, he wanted to live closer to his job, which would have been in Dearborn. But at that time, they weren't allowing blacks to live in Dearborn.
Wow. So, and I was born in Dearborn.
Yeah, I mean, wow. Things have changed. And then what happened is they started a lending program that allowed people to buy homes that had been in the military, and they didn't have to have a down payment. It was Citizens Mortgage was the company, and it was actually backed by Ford Motor Company because they didn't want to have people trying to move into Dearborn, creating a lot of what they thought would be issues racially. Mm-hmm. So Inkster became kind of a black city, but at that time, new homes that blacks could come from the South and buy a brand new brick home.
You have a date on this?
The home was built in 1949. Mm-hmm. I was actually born in 1950. Okay. So I moved into a new house, you know.
Oh.
Now, the house only had two bedrooms, one bathroom, and it was five of us. I had two brothers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I wonder how we got by with one bathroom and two bedrooms, but it all worked out, you know. anyway, we had basically a new house. My dad eventually built a garage on the back of the house and, you know, with a driveway and everything. So, you know, I actually thought it was beautiful. You know, I didn't really know we wasn't doing that well, you know, and I just thought it was great. And the community was really close. So that made everything really nice growing up there, too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you touched on it a little bit earlier. So your family went from what state? You say it was Georgia?
Georgia, yeah. And they were in a city called Fitzgerald, Georgia.
Fitzgerald, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And you said that your
my great aunt
uncle, yes, yeah. her husband. So yeah. That would be your great uncle-in-law?
Right. Yeah.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So your great uncle-in-law started off. You said he was doing jobs in the South, but were they sharecropping jobs?
They were basically sharecropping jobs, mm-hmm. picking cotton. That's how they actually made money back then.
Yep.
I mean, and you know, believe it or not, they would weigh the cotton. I mean, and I always wondered, God, you know, you're gonna pick cotton, then you're gonna weigh it, and that's how you get paid, by how much it weighs. You know, mm-hmm. you had to pick a lot of cotton, you
yes.
know, to weigh it, because you know, you could imagine, you know, if you had a bag of cotton, it probably doesn't even weigh 30 or 40 pounds, you know. And the pay wasn't that great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was really an impetus for them trying to get away from that situation, because there was no other jobs.
So if you could summarize your reasons, I'm going to say, let's get three reasons as to why. Is it the Doster family?
Yes.
Would have migrated from Georgia to Detroit. So what would you say? No, obviously, number one would be economically.
Mm-hmm.
What other two things do you think they were hoping for a difference in the migration?
I think they were hoping not only for economic change, but also they were hoping for to be treated more fairly.
Mm-hmm.
I think they didn't feel like the South was really giving them an opportunity to be treated equally.
Mm-hmm.
Even though once they arrived, I think they could still see there was some segregation. And there was issues, but they felt like at least if you could change the economics of your situation, you could make things better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think their hope was for us, their children, they really realized that the way to kind of break out of that whole stream was education. Because I think both my mom and my dad felt like if they could have continued their education, they could have figured out ways to, you know, economically do better in life, and also do better for their family, in essence. And so they really pushed us to move through and get education.
Okay,
know?
So right now it's kind of funny. I have three E's. I have economics.
Mm-hmm.
I have equality.
Okay.
And then I also have education.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. There we go. I'm gonna move on to the next question.
Okay. Okay. And I'm sorry, I'm jumping around a little bit.
No, this is great.
Okay.
This is great. I love how you're, thank you for opening up.
Yeah.
This is important that you give us all the details and really paint that picture for us.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So next, if you do know, how were your family members cared for in the South when it came, like we're talking medical?
Okay.
And how did that change? Was it the same or was it different when they moved to the North?
Oh, there's a big difference. First of all, they took care of one another. I don't know if I can kind of summarize that. I mean, I don't think they went to the doctor as often as they should have.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of things were taken care of at home, either home remedies. People were just more family oriented. I think when they were in the South, I think they said, okay, I have a relative that's ill. They wouldn't think about sending them away. They would always be taken care of by another family member. Even as the family members grew older, we didn't think about, or we didn't think about sending them to a nursing home and things like that. All of my relatives, especially in the South, it seems like they took care of one another. Mm-hmm. So as an individual got older, they just stayed there. And it actually was the same way with us. We, even though we moved here, my grandmother ended up living with us for a long time, mm-hmm. you know, so we took care of her for a lot of years. And when we had even other relatives come and live with us as they migrated from the South. So it ended up being like, well, my great aunt.
In the one bathroom house?
That's right, that's right. Yeah, sometimes we would have an additional three people living there.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Even though, you know, it sounds like a lot, it really didn't seem too crowded. Now, it probably would be crowded today, given mm-hmm. that, you know, our living situations that we have today. But we didn't think about it like that. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, we thought it was kind of cool. I mean, because having access to them and being able to talk to them, and especially when my aunt, my mother's sister, ended up moving to Detroit area and then moving in with us, my brothers and I, we thought it was great because my mother used to do day work when she first came. She was cleaning houses, mm-hmm. and she had to leave out of the house before we went to school. And when my aunt was here, she was able to make us hot breakfast and everything. So it was really kind of a cool thing for us. We thought that was so good. And plus, listening to her and talking to her and getting to know her, same with my grandmother. So we didn't look at it as, oh, God, we got these extra people in the house. It was really kind of a cool thing to have them there.
You allowed you to establish more connections with your family.
It really was. It really was. And, you know, when I think about how I got to know my grandmother, I think it was really cool that she was living with us. Because, you know, when you live with someone and you can talk to them every day, you learn a little bit about them, a little bit more every day. Every time you talk to them, things they went through. And you really come to appreciate what they've been through. Mm-hmm. When you can talk to them on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. What about the more medical, specializing in that medical mm-hmm. area?
Okay.
Do you know anything?
Well, like I said, unfortunately, I don't know if a lot of my relatives really got the medical care they should have been getting, because a lot of the men on my mom and dad's side of the family didn't live too long. I mean, many of them died in their mid-60s, which was kind of early. And I think part of that was because they didn't get regular medical care. Mm-hmm. A lot of things were done at home. A lot of them may have died of maybe issues that could have been solved if they were seeing a doctor on a regular basis. So I think they, going to the doctor or dentist wasn't a regular thing. You know, people took care of things at home. Mm-hmm. And some of it's economical because, you know, they just didn't have any money to be taking people to the doctor, mm-hmm. you know. And so unless it was a serious situation where they had to go to the hospital, they pretty much took care of it at home.
Okay. So I'm going to backtrack here a little bit. Mm-hmm. You said that for a period of time, your great aunt mm-hmm, came to live with you guys.
My great aunt and her husband moved
her
here
husband
first,
moved.
And then
your grandmother.
So my grandmother's sister.
Okay.
They moved here first.
Okay.
And they were actually living in Detroit.
Okay.
And actually, every relative after that ended up living with her to start out because you know they didn't have a job, no money, and so that was kind of like the first stop for everyone. That it was a pretty good sized house in Detroit.
So who came to live with you? Who was making you the hot breakfast?
Was my mother's sister.
Your mother's sister.
My grandmother.
Okay. Your grandmother.
I had two of my mother's sisters living with us at one time.
Okay, so not your great aunt, but just your aunt.
My aunt.
Okay.
Yeah. They lived with us, and it was all for the same reasons though. All of them were coming to the north, looking for work.
Okay.
You know, and because they didn't have jobs when they came, they had to have someone to stay with, so they would end up staying with a relative, which in our case was us, or my great aunt, which lived in Detroit. And that was just a common thing. It wasn't looked at as unusual either. It was mm-hmm. looked at as, oh, okay, well, you know, you'll just come and you'll just stay with us mm-hmm. until you find something, you know?
So reflecting on, like you said earlier, how you were able to establish those connections with them while your mother was out doing day work,
mm-hmm.
are there any funny stories or interesting stories that they had living in the South that you can recall that you may have asked them about when you were younger?
I don't know if they were funny stories. Funny. I think that they had a lot of stories, not necessarily that I can recall that were funny.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I understand it, wasn't
yeah. it? Yeah, I don't think they, I think they seen their life as being happy because they had family. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they necessarily seen it as, oh, we have a great life in the South. I mean, I don't think they saw their lives as being that great.
So is it okay if I flip the question?
Sure.
What about any stories that are the opposite of that, or something that they lived through and they told you about, life lessons and things to watch out for? Like you said how they, one of the reasons that they moved was for the equality purposes, sure. the three E's that we mm-hmm. went over earlier.
Right, right.
Are there any stories that they have about how that equality that they were hoping for didn't pan out the way that they thought it would when they moved to Detroit?
I don't think so. I think they really felt like it worked for the best. Mm-hmm. I think they were kind of thinking ahead. I think they were thinking about the children. Mm-hmm. You know, they were thinking, I want my children to have a better opportunity than I had. Mm-hmm. So I think their thinking was, if I could come here and I could at least start out economically on a better playing field, mm-hmm. and provide my children with an opportunity to get educated, they would have an opportunity to do more for themselves and then for their families. Mm-hmm. So I think they did the right thing. I mean, I think they didn't feel like staying in the South would work out for them, mm-hmm. you know. You know, when I try to think of funny stories, I don't know if I can think of any funny stories reflecting on their experience in the South. Mm-hmm. Most of them seemed like they were just stories about how they took care of themselves, how they made sure they didn't get in trouble mm-hmm. with the law or with other, like with white people mm-hmm. For doing certain things they shouldn't be doing. Like, for instance, my grandparents, when they grew up, they had to make sure that a man wouldn't look at a white person in the eye. Mm-hmm. And I always wondered about that, you know? And so when they would talk to someone, they would be looking down. And I would be thinking, they grew up trying to learn to do that, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas today, you know, we teach everyone in your family, you teach them to look them in the face, you know, mm-hmm. look them in the eye when you talk to them. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was like a very cruel thing, you know? Like, they were taught to look down when they were talking to, especially a white person, you know? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was just, I don't know, for some reason that just resonated with me. It's just—
Does it rub you the wrong way?
It does, you know, it really does, because, you know, we teach just the opposite, you know? I mean, I taught my children to always look a person in the eye when you're talking to them. Mm-hmm. And I always wondered about my grandfather. All those years he lived, you know, he was taught not to look a person in the eye if they were white.
And it's odd because, I mean, most families, and I assume you as well, they look at the grandfather as the respectable,
sure,
one of the heads of the family. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure it must have been very alarming for you to hear stories about how your grandfather, when right. it came to his white counterparts, didn't even look them in the eye.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that stuck with me, you know, when I think about that.
How would you say situations and customs like that have affected how you operated and how your life decisions and what you aspire to be coming up in Detroit?
I think it's big. I mean, I think for me, I know that a lot of the things that I've taught my children in terms of education, in terms of communication, just in terms of respect, mm-hmm. I think a lot of that came from what I knew my grandparents went through and what my parents went through. I wanted to make sure that my children had a very solid footing, that they could start out, and they knew that they would have a good chance to do whatever they wanted to do in life. So I really made them understand that, first of all, education was the big thing.
Mm-hmm. One of our three E's.
Yep. And that led to, you know, economical opportunities, mm-hmm. and other things. I mean, it just worked out that way, you know. And so I think because of what I learned from my parents and what I learned from my grandparents, I certainly instilled into my children how important it is to be educated.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. What about certain sacrifices that your family had to make during the Great Migration? Are you aware of any maybe leaving behind certain family members or?
Well, you know, everyone wasn't prepared to come, wasn't ready to come, I should say. So many of my mother's siblings didn't migrate here or migrate to the north. And you can actually see the difference.
Today?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, when you take a look at where they ended up in life, and some of it was just opportunity. You know, they just didn't get the opportunity that they would have gotten if they had moved north. I certainly think that when I think about the sacrifices that were made, I mean, certainly my parents, I really respect and appreciate the sacrifices they made when they came here. As I mentioned, my mom had to do day work. She did that for several years, you know, for at least 15 years of my growing up life. And my dad, he was in the factory for just about most of his entire life. He eventually left the factory and then he ended up working for a car dealership as like a janitor, maintenance man. Mm-hmm. But I can see that the sacrifices they made, not only economically, but just juggling their lives, you know, to make sure that their children were taken care of. Mm. You know, you really appreciate it now when you look, reflect back on it. Mm. You just appreciate them more than you did when you were growing up.
And would you say it inspired you to make similar sacrifices when it comes to your children?
Oh, absolutely. You actually want to make sure they have every opportunity that could possibly exist, you know. So when it comes to being educated, you know, you start thinking about, well, are you sure you want to take this class, or do you want to take a more advanced level class? Mm-hmm. Do you want to challenge yourself a little more? I mean, you really make sure you talk to them and make sure they understand where they're headed and why you want them to do certain things. I mean, and it all kind of, like I say, focuses on you want them to be economically okay, so you realize that education is the first step to do that.
All right, well, as we're getting ready to wrap up this interview,
okay,
I wanted to ask you one last question. If we were to summarize these past few questions and minutes of your time, again, okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. What would you want people to know about the Great Migration?
Well, I guess it really is a big thing in my life because I can see, I mean, you know, when I was reading in the history books about blacks moving from the South to the North, I mean, I felt like I was reading about my own family. I mean, I really could see it. You know, I said, wow, I mean, my parents could help write this story because they lived it. I mean, so they actually, when I think about my parents coming here, it's almost exactly the way a lot of people read it in the history books. And so I just, when I look at that, I say, wow, I'm really a product of history that has been recorded. You know, I'm here only because of the sacrifices they made to come here, you know. So I guess that's how I would summarize it, you know.
All right. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you. Mr. Thank you. Boston. This has been great. Thank you very much.